Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Devarim. This Sunday is Tisha B'Av, and Pardes is hosting a full day of study from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. The program features many choices for study during each period. The day includes a memorial service at 2:30 p.m. with remarks by Daniel Landes, director of Pardes, and by the Honorable Dan Shapiro, ambassador of the United States of America to Israel. The entrance fee is 40 shekels, and full program details are available. The information is at our podcast website, that's podcasts.pardesusa.org. This week is Devarim with the podcast by Rabbi David Levenkreus. Rabbi Levenkreus is a faculty member at Pardes and the director of special programs for the Pardes Institute. There is a handout for this podcast, and I'll be sending it along as a PDF file as the next podcast item. And now, Rabbi David Levenkreus.
Thank you, Larry. This week we read Parashat Devarim. And the topic of my Dvar Torah today, the topic of my podcast, is Bacon and Eggs and the Zionist Question. In a recent Jerusalem Post editorial on the 12th of July, 2012, in an op-ed called Identity Matters, the writer spoke about a new form of Jewish identity, which he said, or she said, is called attachment to Israel and is strengthening amongst young U.S. Jews. What has been found is that a lot of young Jewish people who don't necessarily come from strong Jewish backgrounds nevertheless select attachment to Israel as part of their Jewish identity. And later on in the article, it says, in all likelihood, the cumulative impact of birthright Israel in bringing so many young Jews to Israel may be coming to the fore, said Professor Stephen M. Cohen, one of the researchers who conducted the survey. In other words, so many people have been coming to Israel that it actually has created a critical mass of people who say attachment to Israel is one of the things that defines my Jewish identity. This has even affected statistics. It'll be interesting to know how this progresses in future years, how lasting it is, but certainly these are results that seem very, very gratifying. And it led me to the question to ask myself, nevertheless, what does identity and attachment to Israel mean? What does it mean for diaspora Jews to have a relationship with Israel? What we're going to do today is look at three sections of the Torah, two of them actually mentioned in this week's parasha, and one of them suggested by this week's parasha. But let's start off by going through the parasha. Devarim, the parasha we read, is the speech that Moses gave before Am Yisrael entered the land. It's a summary of what happened in the desert, and it's not surprising that it has something to say to us on the issue at hand. I'm going to read through the parasha and show certain points, and then study the stories behind these points, and present then three models of attachment to Israel. The parasha starts with the Israelites at Sinai and God telling them to make their way to Canaan. Moses tells the Israelites that he cannot bear the burden of their bickering alone and therefore directed them to pick leaders from each tribe and bring the hard cases to Moses and the easier cases to go to the leader of the tribes. We're going to look at the original of the story today, but it is interesting that in the version in Exodus, it's Yitro, Moses' father-in-law, who made the suggestion. So that's the first story we're going to look at. The parasha then goes on to talk about the spies who went out to scout the land, 10 giving a bad report and 2 giving a good report. We're not going to be looking at this story, but it is echoed in the story of Reuven, Gad, and Manasseh that we're going to learn today. We then read about the encounters with the Edomites and the Ammonites, with kings such as Sihon and Og, in places such as Seir, Moab, and Bashan. We're not going to look at any of these stories in detail, but we are going to look at an earlier story, not about Moses, but about Abraham, when Avram entered the battle of the four and five kings, including the king of Amorah, who, a later king of Amorah, is mentioned in this week's parasha, Sichon. And finally, the parasha discusses the land for the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh, who, even though they had already received their land outside of Eretz Israel, they needed to serve as shock troops at the head of their Israelite kinsmen, and we're going to look at this story. So three stories we're going to look at today. We're going to look at Yitro coming to visit Moshe. We're going to look at Abraham entering the battle of the four and five kings. And we're going to look at the story of Reuven, Gad, and Manasseh. For those of you who have your source sheets, we're going to be working through the source sheet only Pshat today. We're not using any commentators. What we are doing is we are using our heads and we're saying, in what way do the stories that we have here, are they applicable to our current situation? And we'll start off with the story of Yitro. And let me just make one thing clear. In one way, it's not relevant. We're doing a bit of a jump. And that is that Yitro is not Jewish. He's not a member of Am Yisrael. His daughter is married to Moshe. So he is an Ohev Yisrael or a Karov Li Yisrael, somebody who loves Israel or is close to them, but he's not actually an Israelite. Nevertheless, I think the story can be used as a model for people outside of Israel participating in the life of Israel. So we read that his father-in-law Jethro, Moses' father-in-law Jethro, hears about what has happened, and already that is the first stage. People who are in Chutz Aretz, people who are abroad, but nevertheless read the Jerusalem Post daily, know what's going on in Israel. He hears what is happening, and he says to Moses, I'm going to come, and I'm going to visit you. He goes and sees him. Moses goes to greet his father-in-law. He bows to him. He kisses to him. That sometimes happens to trip people who visit Israel, sometimes not. And then Moses tells him the story. He tells his father everything that God has done to Pharaoh and Egypt. And we hear that Jethro expresses great joy because of all the good that God had done for Israel. Vayichach Yitro al kol ha-tova asher asa Adonai li-Yisrael. He's happy for Am Yisrael. He's joyous. He participates in the happy moments and the difficult moments. He has a feeling for it. And then he gives a prayer. Praise be God who rescued you from the power of Egypt and Pharaoh, who liberated the people from Egypt's power. Now I know that God is the greatest of all deities. Through their very plots he rose above them. Israel is part of his prayer. Israel is part of his consciousness as a human being. Now I know that God is the greatest of all deities. And then we read, Jethro brought burnt offerings and other sacrifices to God. In other words, Vayikach Yitro, Choten Moshe Ola Uzvakim LeElohim, he sacrifices. It becomes part of his ritual. It becomes part of his practice to show thanks to God for what has happened to Israel. It's part of his identity. And then he looks around and he sees that his son-in-law is working too hard. Not the first time that a father-in-law is nervous that his son is working too hard and neglecting his family. His father is working so hard and he gives him advice. Again, not the first time in history that a father-in-law gives his son-in-law advice. Not the first time in history where a non-Jewish consultant firm is brought in to tell a Jewish organization what it's doing wrong. But basically, Moses is wearing himself out. He is not delegating. And Yitro says to him to delegate, which Moses hears is good advice, and he follows. And then it says, and the English is very interesting, at the end of the passage in front of you, it says, Moses let his father-in-law depart. Vayishlach Moshe et chotno v'yelech lo el artzo. The translation says Moses let his father-in-law depart. But it's interesting, the Hebrew says Vayishlach Moshe et chotno, and he sent him out. In other words, there wasn't an expectation of permanence. This is not surprising. He wasn't a member of Am Yisrael, but I think it applies even today. From Jews from Chutz Aretz, there's often a very clear idea. You come here, you rejoice with us. Who we are is part of who you are. We're part of your prayers. We're part of your identity. You give us advice, but ultimately, you go back to where you're from, and there is some type of a difference. So I would say the first model, if you will, is a model of somebody who cares very much about Eretz Israel, who cares very much about Israel, somebody who Israel is part of who they are as a Jew and as a human being, somebody who gives advice to Israel, and we know, and those of us in Israel are not short of people who are willing to give advice to Israel, but ultimately they're not part of the state and not part of what is going on over here. By the way, this is not an unusual state nowadays. There are many, many diaspora Jews who feel, and I'm not saying this pejoratively, I don't want anybody to sound it this way, but there's some diaspora Jews who say, hey, wait a minute, we're the ones who are able to solve Israel's problems. We have a better perspective because we're not there. We're not there and we're able to see things that Israelis are not able to see. As opposed to this, Israelis will say, well, if you're not here, it looks very, very different. The next story is the story of a battle. There were four kings battled against the five kings. There's a horrible war going on. And as part of the war, Abram's nephew Lot is captured. And this is told to Avram. When Avram hears about this, he calls out his 318 fighting men who'd been born in his house. He goes, he fights, and he saves Lot. And this reminds me very, very much of volunteers in the 48 war, when Jews came from all over the world and served in the Machal, in a special force for Jews from Chutz Aretz. In later wars, Six-Day War, 73, sometimes people, maybe later too, people would come from Chutz Aretz in order to take jobs that Israelis who were fighting on the front took. I think this is something very, very different. This is an example of somebody who, rather than advice, actually comes, puts their life on the line and at risk. I remember during the days of the Intifada, when Jews were not visiting from the diaspora, there was a horrible feeling that many of us Israelis had of somehow being abandoned by the people who were supposed to be our allies in Chutz Aretz. This is not what's happening with Avram. He comes in and he fights, but then again, he goes back and he lives his own life. So we have model number one, which is model of somebody whom Israel is part of who they are and is an advice giver. We have model number two. There's actually less emphasis on it being part of who he is, but more emphasis on him being fighting for Lot. And again, none of these are perfect. They're more being used as models, as paradigms, because this is not really Eretz Israel, Chutz Aretz over here, in the same way as the first story was not really Jews. But perhaps the third one is the one that has the most strong parallel, and this is the story of Reuven, Gad, and Chetzi Menashe. They people who have a lot of animals. It's the third source sheet, Bamidbar 32, verses 1 to 22. Reuven and Gad, they have an enormous number of animals, and they go to an area, and they say it is good for livestock. Again, here's another classic stereotype. Jews are in Chutz Aretz and will not come to Israel because it's financially better for them there. And they go straight to Moshe and say that we're in the middle of livestock land and we have livestock. We want to be part of this land. We want to stay here. Again, a memory of a difference. This is land that's contiguous to Eretz Israel, but nevertheless, it's not part of Eretz Israel and they want to stay there and be there and not be part of the battle to join Israel, to fight and get Israel. Moshe is angry about this. He says, why are you trying to discourage the Israelites from crossing over the land? What are you doing? And he says, this is the same thing that your forefathers did when they came and they brought a bad report of the land. You're doing the same thing. You're lowering morale. You're not being good about Eretz Israel. He gets very, very angry. And then Reuven and Gad come to him and says, listen, we'll settle here, but we will then arm ourselves and go on as an advance guard before the other Israelites until we have brought them to their homeland. They say, listen, we are going to stay here, but we're going to go and we're going to fight with Am Israel to the very end. And then the verse that I want to focus on towards the end is that Moshe agrees and he says, if you do this and you fight with us, you can go home. And then it says, Vayiten Nikiyim Mehashem Umi Yisrael, and you will be free of any obligation before God and Israel. And as a result, V'ta ha'aret hazot lachem la'achuza lifnei Hashem, the land will be yours as your permanent property before God. This is a very, very different model. Here the model is not come, have an emotional experience and give advice. It's not even come and help by fighting. Both of those are great, by the way, in my mind. But this is something different. Being part and parcel of what is going on in the Jewish state, in Eretz Israel, is the price for them living where they are. It's not that they're doing something nice for us. It is their obligation, and all that they are doing is fulfilling an obligation. This is a much, much powerful model. It says that an identification and being part of Am Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael is an essential part of what it means to be a Jew. Not only is it an essential part of being a Jew, but it is the price, or it is the duty that one has in order to live, and in order to live where you are, in order to be legitimately in your place in Chutz Aretz, one requires full commitment to what is happening in Eretz Israel. The first story beautifully showed how what goes on with Am Israel is part of who Yitro is, but what the last story is saying is it can't just be part, it is who you are. Perhaps the best way to describe this is about the pig and the chicken, who both loved their farmer. And one day the chicken comes and says to the pig, listen, for the good of the farmer, I think we should give him a nice breakfast. He's always so good to us. Let's give him a nice breakfast of bacon and eggs. Anyway, the chicken expects the pig to be very excited about it, and the pig is not excited about it. Pig doesn't seem very enthusiastic at all. The chicken says, what's the problem? You don't like our farmer? You don't want to give him something special? So the pig looks at him and said, it's all very fine for you. All you've been asked is to give a contribution. For me, it's full commitment. And I think that's what the third story is saying. A contribution is not enough. What we need is full commitment. Speaking as an Israeli, I would say that the first story is what we have in Eretz Israel at the moment. We have Jews from Chutz Aretz who care about Israel, for whom it's part of who they are as Jews, and who will prefer advice. I'd say we have a lot of the second too. People who contribute money, people who come here to volunteer, people who fight in the army. And I would say the second model for me personally is what I would want. People who come and who don't just visit, who don't just have opinions, but who also actually do something. I think the third is a pipe dream for most Jews in the diaspora. Most Jews in the diaspora have either not thought of coming to live in Israel, have decided to be there. For modern people in a modern world, this is certainly, to my mind, a legitimate choice and a legitimate Jewish choice. But I think it's important for us to have this as well, that Israel's not a luxury. It's not, this is again me personally speaking, it's not a luxury. It's not something that is an addendum to my Jewish identity. What the third one is saying is that identification, contribution, and commitment to Eretz Israel is an essential part of what it means to be a Jew. Ken yehi ratzon. May it be so.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz. Thanks for tuning in. And we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.